Have you ever heard a musical artist described as having great chops? What does that mean? Well, the term chops is slang in the music business that refers to an artist that has developed great skills over time, whether they are a musician, composer, producer, or other titles associated with the music business. This is Scott Grimaldi, your host of Got Chops. Join me as I interview one musical artist per episode that I've had the pleasure of either performing, recording, or work with in my career. Plus, I'll be interviewing artists I've always wanted to speak with. We'll discover how each artist developed their chops, listen to their stories, and much more. This is Got Chops. My special guest artist for today is a cellist, composer, teacher, and musically gothic storyteller. That's her playing the cello behind me on the Rolling Stones song Paint It Black, as featured in the Netflix original Wednesday, that has also become a Halloween favorite. My guest has received bachelor's and master's degrees in cello performance and plays both acoustic and electric cellos. She has been making a name for herself on social media as a classical trained crossover artist since 2018, with followers of over 500,000. Through original arrangements, mashups, and compositions, my guest presents the cello in unique music videos that fuse genres and translate classical music for modern audiences. As a performer, she has collaborated with artists that include violinist and dancer Lindsay Sterling and the Las Vegas female string ensembles Femmes of Rock and Bella Electric Strings, just to name a few. This multi-talented cellist certainly got chops. Please welcome the Cello Doll. Hi, Carolyn. This is Scott from Got Chops. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. On the phone right now, calling from Las Vegas, Nevada, is today's special guest artist who is recognized as the Cello Doll. Carolyn is someone I've never met or performed with in my career, and this is the first time I'm speaking with her over the phone. I started following today's guest over 2 years ago when I saw videos of her performing with one of my other podcast guests from season two, Nina DiGregorio, the founder of Femmes of Rock. Carolyn, thanks so much for granting me this interview. I'm looking so forward to our conversation today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Scott. Thank you for having me, and I'm very excited to chat with you too.
Well, thank you. As a classically trained cellist, composer, storyteller, and educator, what does the music slang Got Chops mean to you?
So in my experience, Got Chops is somebody that has a high technical proficiency on their instrument, very sensitive musicality, and also a high level of top-notch consistency when they perform.
That's great. That's a great answer. And I know that you're also an educator, music educator like myself, and I'm sure you'd impart these words of wisdom to your students like I do. And when you do, depending upon the expertise the student has, they look at you either like, come on, or as they get older and they want to major music, yep, okay, you imparted the right stuff to me.
Yeah, that's our job as educators, absolutely, is to set them up for success and to gain those chops.
Absolutely. So when did you first hear of this slang term, got chops?
It's actually a funny story. So when I was growing up and in high school, my school district didn't have a string orchestra, and I still wanted to be active in my music department. So I actually played a brass instrument. I'm giving you some hot gossip on this podcast, Scott, because a lot of people don't know this. But I actually played euphonium for about 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And so my band director from high school actually kept saying the mantra, you got to practice and work those chops, work those chops.
That's it.
So that's it. So that was actually the first time I heard that phrase.
Wow. That's a funny story. And all the people I've interviewed, I've never heard of anyone that, you know, majored in strings but started on the brass instruments. That's really cool. I love that.
Yeah, I did them in tandem together for sure. But it definitely gave me a unique insight into the brass world.
So where were you born and raised?
So I grew up in Nashua, New Hampshire, which is a city that's right on the Massachusetts border.
Okay, great. And I know you currently live in Las Vegas, correct?
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
How long have you been a resident of Las Vegas?
So I'm actually coming up on my 2-year anniversary. So I'm still pretty freshly relocated to Vegas.
It's a great town, and as you know, it has a lot of tradition with all the live shows that would go up to like 4 or 5 in the morning. So you're part of a great heritage there.
Yeah, that was definitely a huge draw for me. Before that, I was in Boston and New York City, kind of going back and forth. And I did want to try the West Coast scene for quite some time, and just the variety of genres and performance opportunities that are out here was very appealing to me.
So what was the inspiration and or pivotal moment when you knew the cello was going to be your instrument of choice?
So this is one of my favorite stories. The cello, in a weird way, kind of chose me. So when I was young, from the moment I was born, my sister was actually taking violin lessons. So the moment I was in this world, I was hearing violin because she would practice at home, things like that. And according to my mother, I was about 1.5 years old, and my sister was practicing, and one of our neighborhood kids actually spun out on their bicycle near our front yard. Thankfully, they were totally okay. They were fine. But my mom and sister ran out to make sure they were all right, checking on them. And while out there, my mom heard music coming from the house. And she said, well, the violin daughter's out here. What's going on there? And she went inside, and apparently I had taken the violin, was holding it vertically, and was scratching at it with the bow back and forth on the strings. So my mom just kind of looked at me thinking, what do I do with this? And so since I held it vertically, it was always a family joke that I was destined to play cello. And so when I felt ready to take on that responsibility and be diligent in lessons, I started, and I was instantly hooked.
Wow, that's a great story. That's excellent. And I'm sure when you were in school and, you know, looking to play the cello, and you probably told your string teacher that, they were impressed also.
Yeah, it was really fun. And not to be said, though, they always pushed me And I felt very lucky that I understood very early on what kind of responsibility it was to learn a string instrument and want to do it seriously. And another reason I felt so connected to the cello was, unfortunately, growing up around that time when I was 8, I was being severely bullied in school.
That's awful.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, being that young, it took a toll on kind of my self-esteem and the way I viewed myself. And when I found cello and I brought it to kind of a generic show and tell kind of day, and my peers thought it was so cool. And they were saying, oh my gosh, Carolyn, this is really awesome. And this is something so new and cool. And I started getting confidence through something that I learned. I could make this my thing. I could make this my project, my love. And it really helped me to gain confidence again and to work hard and perform. And it just was very healing for me to have cello in my life as well.
That's great. Another great story. And again, I use this phrase, pivotal, you know, what was the pivotal moment? And that certainly was yours. And you just know, okay, this is my calling and this is for me. That's great. So speaking of classical music, cello, who are your favorite classical composers and cello artists?
Yeah, so when I was approaching college and early college, I discovered the composer Dmitri Shostakovich, and he wrote one of my favorite pieces of all time, his first cello concerto. And when I heard it, I could feel the tension and the fear he felt while composing that piece. And it just emotionally moved me so much. And his music is a little darker. It's also very dramatic. And so his style really spoke to me as a composer. And of course, as a cellist, I also have to really love Bach for his cello suites. And that collection of his works is very important to any cellist. And so he really set a precedent for solo cello playing and showing what the cello can do in such a beautiful way that wasn't common when he was alive in the Baroque era.
That's great. It's interesting to me, everyone that I speak to, including myself, why we gravitate towards certain instruments. It's not just the way the instrument looks, but, you know, the first and foremost thing is how it sounds. And that goes back to the tone, the timbre, the color. It's like, wow, that resonates with me. And that's another great story.
Yeah, thank you. And your question about cello artists, when I was in college, I also discovered more about Jacqueline Dupré. And she was really big in her time, hugely because she was incredibly dramatic on stage in a way where she just completely transcended when she performed. And the cello, she became a vessel for the cello. She was so expressive. And also in that time when she was alive, it was huge to be a female soloist.
There you go.
So she was, yeah. So she was a big pioneer in her time for that. So that was very inspiring to me. And kind of in a whole nother realm, so a very modern day inspiration for me is my favorite band, Apocalyptica, because they started off as conservatory students in Finland, and they became huge by doing Metallica covers on cello.
Wow, how great.
Yeah, and they just become rock stars on stage with the cello. And they tour the world. I've seen them perform a couple times. And they also transcend in their own way when they perform. And so that's very inspiring to me. Also, because they were doing this. Nowadays, you go on the internet and you see a lot of people doing covers, instrumentals. And when they started, it wasn't super common. So they were really brave in doing that because it wasn't as widely accepted back when they were starting. So they are definitely part of the group of people that have paved the way for instrumentalists to become cover artists.
Let's talk about those early years when you studied and practiced the cello. I think you began at age 8, and including the concerto competitions.
Yeah, so a concerto competition is when somebody plays a piece where they are going to be a soloist accompanied by an orchestra. And concertos are very virtuosic and flashy. And the first competition I won, I was 15 years old, and that was with the youth orchestra I played with at that time. And that was also a very pivotal moment for me because it was such a powerful experience to play with an orchestra behind you and to tell a story to the audience and to show them what this piece of music means to you. And from that moment, I was really intrigued by the power of storytelling. And of course, to get to that moment of competing, it's countless hours of practicing and preparation.
Right.
So it's a huge moment where you feel all of that work paid off.
Absolutely. And I read that you earned both a dual bachelor's in cello performance and music theory / composition, a master's in cello performance from Boston University, and a performance diploma from the Manners School in New York City. Share with my listeners how long it took you to achieve all these degrees.
Too long.
You just ended yesterday? Was that it? You completed it?
Sometimes it feels that way. So all of those degrees together are achieved in 8 years.
Wow. Ooh.
And I definitely took a gap year between one, and it probably accumulated to about 9 or 10 years to get all of those degrees.
So let me ask you, coming from a family of musicians and same thing, you know, studying for how many years and going to prestigious music conservatories and jazz schools, my parents, even though they're musicians, they still gave me the talk. Okay, so you're going to have all these degrees or all these certificates or all this experience. What do you want to do? Do you want to end up in an orchestra? You know how difficult that is. Are you going to be a touring musician? Do you have something to fall back on? So were you given talks like that, or is like, no, we believe in you. You know what to do in case it doesn't happen. Just curious.
Sure. So my parents have always been incredibly supportive and encouraging. But that's not to say there weren't difficult times where, let's say, you didn't get an audition you worked really hard for. And there are a lot of discouraging moments. And I think it was very difficult for my parents to see the lows of studying for music. And there definitely are quite a few of those, even though a lot of people like to share the success stories, there are a lot of failed attempts along the way. So I think my parents really valued that I had the understanding of how difficult it would be. And I think we often had little chats here and there if I was feeling down or discouraged about, you know, what else would be a possibility, but I couldn't really think of anything else. I was just so set on this and making it work. Whatever it took, I was gonna try. However many hours I needed, I would try. So I just felt so determined and invested in what I was doing that I just kept pushing.
So let's talk about you and your profession and what you've created. How did you come up with your stage name, The Cello Doll?
Yeah, so that's also a funny story where it's a very big moment when you decide you want to have a public presence and if you want to pick a stage name, because that really sets the precedent for your brand. And I took a lot of time and I was juggling different names. And one thing that was so funny was one of my former teachers had an email, and I think it was the cello guy or that cello guy. And I thought that was so funny. So when I was taking lessons with them, and I had to have an email address. I was younger. It was my first email address. And it had Cello Doll in it because I wanted to have cello and then kind of a witty persona name. And so you speed forward when I was around, I believe, 25 when I wanted to do this online presence. And so I couldn't stop getting that first email address out of my head. And I was thinking, oh, I was so young, I can't pick that name. But it just kept poking me. You know, hey, I'm here, Cello Doll. And I kept thinking about it, the word doll. And a lot of people will say, oh, they're a doll when someone's darling or charming. And I thought that was appealing. But also I was thinking a lot about how I wanted storytelling to be a huge part of my persona. And a doll is something you can dress up.
Oh.
You can play make-believe. Mm-hmm. You can play make-believe.
Mm-hmm.
You can transform their appearance, their story. And I thought that was also pretty fitting. So I guess my younger self maybe had some insight that I wasn't aware of. So it ended up coming together.
I love it. This sparks an interest in trying to come up with a name for yourself, a branding. When I was younger, you don't know much about me, but I'm a woodwind doubler and arranger and composer like yourself. So I said, man, let me see if I can come up with something. And one of my buddies had the perfect business card. He was an arranger. He was called the Lone Arranger.
I love it.
I'm going, oh, man, so crafty. That's really great. And people never forgot that and called him just based on that. And when they found out he was a really great arranger, you know, that was the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
So speaking about your online presence, you are branded as a classically trained crossover artist who has resulted in followers of over 500K. That's astounding. My God. And in addition, you share performance tips. Like I mentioned before, you create customized string arrangements and dub yourself, as you just said, a musically gothic storyteller. And including your persona, I would like you to talk about this, as well as Wednesday Adams, who plays the cello on the Rolling Stones song Painted Black, as I played at the top of today's show. So if you could please share with my listeners the result of this very unique branding and how it's opened doors for you in the music industry, especially right now during Halloween.
Yes, this is my favorite time of year. It's always been my favorite time of year. And realizing I had this platform and I could celebrate it through music. And as I said earlier, kind of the more emotionally heavy, sometimes seen as darker music always appealed to me. So it's kind of my passion project when this time of year comes around. And I can share that and create kind of these eerie, creepy soundscapes. And what you mentioned with Paint It Black, I started watching the Netflix series Wednesday. And when I saw that scene where she's playing Paint It Black, I said, this is my moment. I was made for this project. This I was so excited to do my own rendition of it. And it's kind of interesting because it was also a full circle moment when I realized the band I mentioned before, Apocalyptica, was a part of the cello music for the Wednesday series.
Oh, wow.
Which is really cool. So some of their music is featured in that series as well. And it was just so fun for me to put on a Wednesday outfit and play the cello as she does with kind of her character.
Yes.
And it was actually, it was funny. It was much more challenging than I thought because I tend to be very expressive with my face when I perform as myself. And so I had to really work on having this very stone cold, serious face the whole way through, which was really difficult, actually, especially because that piece is very challenging.
Yes, it is. Wow.
It's very difficult. So I would look through takes and go, no, your eyebrows are twitching too much. You can't use that one. Her eyebrows don't twitch. Wednesday uses her eyebrow movements very selectively. And so that's been really fun, is having these projects where I feel like I can express my interests. And I consider myself a very extroverted person. And people find it funny when they learn I'm really into these gothic fashion, these more gothic stories. So I think it's kind of a fun duality to play around with when you're online. And in terms of opportunities in the music industry, it's really fun when someone comes to me wanting creepy cello music or dark cello music. And yeah, that's happened a few times, and I get to collaborate with someone on a project I know I'm going to be extremely excited about, and also something that I feel like I deeply understand and can relate to, creepy cello music or darker cello music. So I get to compose, I get to arrange stuff for people. So I find these little passion projects that are very fun to do and to work with other people.
Talk about the artists you have collaborated with over the years, such as Femmes of Rock and Bella Strings. And most recently, I saw on Instagram, that was fantastic, with violinist Lindsay Sterling. I'm not familiar with her at all. In addition to playing an acoustic string instrument, tell my listeners about your electric cello and gear, and what it's also like to perform standing up with a cello without a floor peg.
Yeah, that's been such a unique opportunity to play that electric cello. And it ties in well with talking about Lindsay Sterling and Bella Strings, because those ensembles and that opportunity with Lindsay was primarily electric cello. So definitely coming to Vegas has been a chance to really get in touch with electric cello playing. Unfortunately, it's not super common in conservatory environments yet.
Hello.
It's getting better. I know, but it's such a unique experience to get a lot more mileage on my electric cello. I feel like I'm learning so much every day and like I'm still in school. And I find it so fascinating that I get to learn while working and making a living. I still get to learn, which is so fun for me.
I'm just curious, do you ever get pushback from the very haughty-taughty conservatory string players that are looking at you and going, what are you doing? This is not what we do.
Oh, absolutely. I think whenever you try to push the boundary or the standard or think outside of the box, you're definitely going to get some pushback and flack. And that's another reason I was very excited to perform with Lindsey Stirling too, because she was on an early season of America's Got Talent as a violinist and a dancer. So she would dance and play violin at the same time. And that was something unheard of when she was on the show. And she did experience a lot of pushback herself, a lot of criticism. And she ended up making a brand, and she's a Yamaha artist, and she sells out arenas, full out, giant following. And so she is an inspiration for me in terms of perseverance for something that is different. And I entered a social media contest of hers, and I was selected to appear with her on one of her cities of her US tour. And we did a duet of her original song, The Upside. And it was absolutely incredible, unforgettable experience.
I can see that performance in my head from Instagram. I don't know you at all, but you exude such confidence when you play. And, you know, the passion, again, like I said before, comes out. And you can see the interplay between the two of you. She was absolutely loving what you were doing. She was giving you the spotlight and back and forth. So I'm sure that was great exposure for you. And I'm sure she probably asked you to play with her again.
Yeah, I mean, it was phenomenal. And I really appreciated that, you know, she introduced me.
Wow.
She asked, you know, what should we call you by? I hear you have a stage name. And it was it was so fun. And I really get a lot of respect for artists like that who want to share their spotlight with other people who might not be as well known. And, you know, she's from LA and I'm here in Vegas, and she alluded that she was happy I was close by. Mm. So we will see. Little eyebrow raise. We'll see. So that was incredible to meet her. And also the other question you had about getting flack from people, I know I did a project that I knew was going to get flack, and you kind of have to mentally prepare yourself so that when you see negative comments, you don't take it personally. And that was something, especially being on social media so much, that's something I really had to learn, was if someone makes a comment like that, you have to go, well, who's making the comment?
Right.
Is it a mentor of mine that I highly respect and is saying, well, you know, maybe that wasn't your best take or something, or is it some random person that you've never met before? You know, like, who's giving you the critique? And I think that really helped me. The project I was referencing was I did a rendition of Bach's really famous G major prelude on cello. And the minute people think of cello, this is the piece you're imagining in your head. It's super famous, very well known. I played it on electric cello.
Oh.
And not only did I do that, I made it G minor.
They're going to take your degree away in theory.
No. Hey, I thought I was very proud of how I translated it, although somebody got in a tizzy over one bar and how I decided to, I made it a, it's a whole can of worms. But I was like, wow, if they're getting really picky about one bar, maybe I did a good job if those kinds of people are coming out of the woodwork to give their 2 cents. But the other thing too about electric playing that I've heard a lot about in Vegas, and I want to say here too, when you see someone on an electric instrument, especially a string instrument, and we're dubbing, as you were mentioning, a guitar solo, some people think we're not even playing.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and I want to say here, it would take so much work to learn how to synchronize your fingers in rhythm, your bow arm in rhythm, and to play that so pristinely and perfectly, to fake that and mime that, it's almost impossible. It would almost take more time than going to music school to learn how to fake that in perfect time and completely synchronized. So it's just kind of unbelievable to me that people think, oh, they're just faking it, it's so easy to fake. No, I promise it's not faking.
Yeah, I really do believe it all comes down to jealousy. And when they see how many followers you have, you know, people just don't follow artists, you know, to pick up another, you know, a like or a love, you know, on Facebook, Instagram, or whatever. No, you have something, it's very apparent, and they're so jealous of you and everything that you have. Well, then do the work, and you can possibly get a little bit of a percentage of that if you really try your best, but they don't.
Absolutely. And it's one of those things where, well, the time and energy you're taking to make these comments, put it in your own passion, you know, do it something that is fruitful for yourself and your own niche. And kind of backtracking, I don't want to forget your question about the electric cello and lack of floor peg, or what we call the end pin. Yes, I can't forget my little electric cello magic. So that cello, that was one reason that cello really called out to me. Not only because it had great reviews of a high sound quality. This electric cello is by NS Design, and it's a very sleek, minimalist design. If you look at it, it doesn't really look like a cello. It kind of looks like the neck of a cello on a small rectangular body with a bridge. So it's very compact, yes. And that brand has a custom body strap that goes over my left shoulder, down my chest, and a half circle around my waist. And the cello can sit on that, and I don't need an end pin, and I can move. And you were mentioning the engagement of performing with Lindsey Stirling. Yeah, having the freedom of not being in a chair, it was very important for me to learn how to walk on stage while playing and engage the audience that way, because I try to be, audience engagement is so important to me, whether I'm in a chair playing acoustic cello or standing. But I wanted to really push and say, well, can I do this standing? Can I figure this out? And the thing about standing is it kind of completely changes the angle of the cello neck. And, you know, I'm so used to shifting and playing notes along one angle. It actually became my quarantine project, was learning how to adjust and go back and forth between the two, because they are unique instruments. So learning how to stand and be fluid, get rid of any rigid feelings in my legs, things like that. There's actually a funny video where I'm walking around and, you know, doing turning and pivoting and doing all these wacky things with the cello. And you can see over time how my body loosens up. I think it was like a progression video over the course of 28 days from day one to a few days before I went to play with Lindsay, and just kind of seeing how it can add to your performance, having that fluidity when you move. So it's been super fun. And again, another thing I get to learn about every time I use it.
Well, everything you just mentioned comes across so crystal clear on your Instagram post. And so I'm sure my listeners will certainly want to check that out because they're interested. And just from the way you're talking, I know they're probably going there right now to look at it.
Oh, that'd be so cool. Yeah, go for it. Go.
Absolutely. So please pick two different musical selections from your albums or videos that you feel best represents what you do as a cellist that I could filter into this interview as you speak about them now.
So the first track is from my debut album, which came out last November. And it's the opening track, and it's an original Cello Doll composition called Overture, Dusk Approaches. And this is opening the curtain on the story of the album. So the entire album is a storyline that's kind of reminiscent of a gothic Alice in Wonderland. And throughout this overture are themes of the original compositions I sprinkle into the album. So you get a little sampling of the original tracks I have, and it kind of sets the atmosphere and tone for the work. And this also alludes to the opera tradition of the overture, which is kind of my classical crossover playing into this overture. And that was very important for me to allude to some classical tradition. So you get a sampling and a medley of what's to come later on in the album.
And do you have a second one as well?
Yes. So this is probably the most difficult arrangement I ever made of Mussorgsky's Baba Yaga from his Pictures at an Exhibition. And this piece is originally for piano and was later arranged for an entire orchestra. So how do I take something that has such a wide range from low to high and put it on a cello, which has just a little over half of the range capabilities of a piano? Mm-hmm. So that was a very fun challenge, although sometimes frustrating, but it was worth it. It was worth it in the end. And the thing that was so important to include this piece for me is this is a very famous piece in the classical community and maybe only slightly outside, but it's such a compelling story. And it's this frightening piece about the Baba Yaga, who is basically this old witch terrifying witch. And she's has a hut. It's also called the Hut on Fowl's Legs because it's basically a hut with giant bird legs coming after you. And it's terrifying. It's scary. And I think these pieces have really compelling stories because you could see that as a scene in a horror movie or a fantasy movie. And so I embellished the arrangement with bird calls and gusts of wind to kind of give this eerie backdrop. And so trying to showcase these pieces that have such compelling stories, I think is a way to make it relatable to modern listeners.
And it ties right into your theme as far as storytelling and dressing up. This is very obvious to me, and I'm sure my listeners, that everything you do is a culmination of everything that was meant to be for you. So bravo.
Thank you. And I think finding that balance makes the long hours worth it. And that's something.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something, especially being online, having this unique platform, you often go through this inner battle of what's trending versus what might be less popular but is more attuned to who I am as an artist. And that is a balance that is so difficult. And you have to check in with constantly that you're not succumbing to what you think is popular, but maybe not quite what you want to do, but you want to get the views or you want to get the likes. So you're going to do this thing. But I think doing something that might be slightly less popular, but feels more attuned to how I identify, makes the long hours worth it and makes the project worth it and the costuming and the planning and makes it all more worth it. And it makes you more authentic to people too.
So for the string players listening to this episode, I'm sure they'd love to hear about the endorsements you have, your string arrangements, and the opportunity to study with you privately.
Yes. So I do have an opportunity to have private lessons, whether you're in the Las Vegas area, or I actually have a lot of success with working with students over Zoom, especially during the quarantine period. I had to really get savvy really quick on how to make this worthwhile for my students. So I've definitely figured out a formula that I think works well for virtual lessons. So people can, I'm sure I'll mention it at the end, people can contact me for that or get discounted lessons through my Patreon account is a way to support Cello Doll and get unique monthly perks. And one of them is discounted lessons. In terms of endorsements, I have worked with a handful of brands that have a social media presence and are trying to make these products more reachable, more attainable online, including Leatherwood Rosin, which is an incredible rosin brand I've worked with, Corus Bows, which are trying to figure out the technology for a very unique, high quality vegan synthetic hair for your bow. So traditionally, string player bow hairs come from horses. And, you know, it's, if it's done correctly, it should be like a haircut for the horse, not a big deal. But some players who are vegan have difficulties with that. And so Caress made a synthetic quality hair that can also be dyed in all colors of the rainbow because it's a synthetic material. So that was been really fun working with them, giving them feedback, and watching their product grow has been really, really cool to do and to write to them about feedback. And it's really cool to be a part of these smaller businesses that are trying to make products for today's string player and to work with them on that. So those have been a couple of the endorsements. Also with my cello, I am an NS design artist.
Wow, good for you.
Thank you. So that's been really cool to have a listing on their website and to possibly have opportunities with them in the future and to make their cello and their brand more well known for players who are interested in electric string performance.
So where can my listeners find you on social media? I mentioned Instagram. I know you're on YouTube. And where can they purchase your music and merchandise?
Sure. So my artist's name is The Cello Doll. And if you search that at The Cello Doll, you can find me, as Scott was saying, on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and also on YouTube. And for music and merch, you can go to my website, cellodoll.com, and I have a landing page for all of the streaming services. You can find my music, and there's also a link there for Cello Doll merch, which is something that's actually pretty new. After a lot of requests, I took the time to figure out a logo and an aesthetic that I wanted for my merch. And so that's something that's been very exciting to do. And you can find that all on cellodoll.com.
Great. And can you share with my listeners any upcoming live performances or projects that you'd like to announce?
Sure. So by the time this episode comes out, I would have published a series of creepy cello covers for Halloween. And this is usually I do one big project every Halloween season, but this time I want to up the ante and do a couple of them. And so if you go to my YouTube channel or any of my streaming, such as Spotify or Apple Music, you'll see these new releases with music videos to match that will be self-produced. So that is a big project that will be out by this time. So definitely I would encourage people who are new to the Cello Doll and want to get a glimpse into the atmosphere and aesthetic, that would be a fabulous place to start.
Let me ask you something, because you're obviously an artist that clearly thinks outside of the box because of your branding and your persona and everything else that you're doing, and you're constantly thinking of other things to add or subtract to what your branding is. So I was wondering, do you have a catchphrase that you live by?
That's an awesome question. So when I first started Cello Doll, I came up with the slogan, classical music with an edge. has been kind of my mantra since the beginning. And as I've been developing Cello Doll, and you mentioned things to add or change or subtract, I've actually been trying to think of a slightly different catchphrase, because one thing I've been very passionate about recently has been genre fusion. So I don't want to limit myself to only classical music, even though that's my origin story and I have such a deep love and respect for classical music, and I still want to be a pioneer for that. I want to be a chameleon. So kind of reworking that phrase, but for right now, the Cello Doll origins was classical music with an edge.
The reason I ask is that I have a catchphrase also that I think very clearly ties into who you are, what you're all about. It's not my way, it's the way it is.
That's really good. That's really good. And if anyone, you know, you should have that copied into your clipboard. If you get any trolls online, you can just copy and put that in as the reply, and include maybe like a shrug emoji or something. Like, it's just the way it is. I love that. I love that.
Well, Carolyn, thanks so much for a great and fun interview. I had a blast in our conversation today, and I'm sure my listeners will all agree that you certainly got chops.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Scott. I had a blast here as well, and it's so fun to virtually meet you and all of your listeners, and I was so thrilled to come on today, so thank you so much for having me.
Well, my pleasure. Carolyn, have a great day. Take care now.
You too, Scott.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much for joining me on today's show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation and could hear why my guest got chops. You can follow my podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or Anchor.fm, and stay connected between episodes on Instagram at GotChopsPodcast. Join me on the next episode when we discover why my next guest got chops.